Welcome to Conversations with Leaders on Tremendous Life Radio, providing some of today's most influential and inspiring leaders a platform to share their stories of growing up, what happened, and what they're doing today. Now, here's your host, Todd Weaver.
I'm really looking forward to our guest tonight. We have Mr. Steve Rizzo. Get your shift together. He's been called the attitude adjuster, and I like the sound of that. Steve, thanks so much for taking time out and being on the show.
Hey, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this for a while. So let's get started right away. I like to always get a little bit of a backstory on our guests, try to get a feel of what was going on. Can you tell us some of the early years, you know, where you're from and kind of how you felt about yourself and what was going on around
you? Sure. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, and moved out east where I live right now, Long Island, way out east Long Island, and had your regular childhood with a ton of negative labels, though. I'm cutting right to the quick now. This is where all the problems started, and not realizing that these negative labels were festering and molding the direction for most of my life. When I was in eighth grade, I had a guidance counselor tell me right in front of my mom and dad I wasn't smart enough to go to college. And the sad truth there is that, we believed him. My mom and dad were from the old school, and they figured, you know, this guy's got to know what he's talking about. Look at his title, guidance counselor. If he doesn't know, who does?
Yeah.
So not only did I let this idiot tell me what I couldn't do, I let him tell me what I was going to do. And then my senior year in high school, I was voted least likely to succeed.
Yeah.
So, you know, all that kind of stuff this way down. So I said, well, what the hell? I might as well become a comedian.
Yeah.
So, so that's what happened. You know, I'm really cutting to the quick here, but
yeah.
I did go to college before I did stand up, and I did graduate with high honors, and I have quite a few degrees under my belt, and I taught for a few years. And my last year of teaching, I started doing stand up comedy part time at some of the local clubs on Long Island, that's when I hung out with Eddie Murphy and, you know, Jerry Seinfeld and Paul Reiser and all the New York Long Island guys. And, loved it. Quit the school thing. Did comedy full time for 16 years, and at the pinnacle of my career, I decided to leave and became a motivational speaker.
You said an awful lot there, pretty quick. You showed that pesky guidance counselor, right?
You know, it's real funny about that. When I went back to teach, it was at the same school that I graduated from, and that got. Council was still there, and it was his last year there. He was retiring, and I went into his office to talk to him about what he did and what he said. And I wasn't accusing; I was just saying, I just want you to know that you never gave me a chance. And he got all upset. You know, I mean, really, like, started throwing papers around and everything. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm saying, well, the sad truth of the whole thing is, how many other students did you tell that to that weren't as fortunate as I was to turn my life around? How many of them are still living with those labels? So the reason why I went from comedy to become a motivational speaker, because I realized towards the end of my comedy career, a lot of my opening acts were Drew Carey and Dennis Miller, Rosie O'Donnell, and, you know, quite a few others. And I realized that they started passing me by and making their ways to fame and fortune. I kept wondering, why was an opportunity knocking on my door? And I made this harsh realization that opportunity was knocking on my door. It's just that I was afraid to open it.
Yeah.
I had an incredible fear of success and of failure.
Hmm.
Talk about not being able to make up your mind.
Yeah.
So once I came to that conclusion, and it hurt, I went on a self-help quest to better myself. And I read many, 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 many books, and went to motivational seminars, and went to workshops, and listened to CDs and DVDs, went to like 6 Tony Robbins seminars. And through the years, I started changing inwardly. And my perspective on the outside world was starting to have a healthier view. And I really felt good about myself. And that's the time when the comedy industry really took a major interest in me, but I was no longer interested in them. And I started listening to this little inner voice stating, you should be helping people. with their lives. So the tools that I use to turn my life around are the tools that I use when I speak to corporate America and give my public seminars around the country and parts of the world.
You know, it's wild when I'm listening to this. You know, we got a lot of guests and I ask these questions because it just fascinates me, you know, how people looking back, always being able to look back to see how, I mean, those negative voices, those negative blocks, the things that we learn, you know, right away, whether people are trying to hurt us or block us, or they just tell us things like, you know, you got to go get a real job. You can't be a comedian or an author, you know, those kind of things, and how we kind of buy into them, you know, it kind of stunts us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that will say, oh, yeah, well, I'll show you. Don't tell me, you know, but I wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
I actually believe this guy, you know, and it's, and I guess the fact that my mom and dad didn't say anything to him, you know, that just made it more intense.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was fortunate. I was able to break that label and, I wouldn't give what I do for a living up for nothing in the world, man. It's the best play I ever made. A lot of my comedian friends couldn't believe I did what I did. They thought I was crazy because they kept thinking I was so close to getting what I wanted. But my perspective was, is how could you be close to something you don't want anymore, you know?
Yeah, but isn't that wild? It's kind of like a learning experience. You don't know it right away, right? I mean, you thought you were doing what you were created to do, or did you mention it earlier? You said that listening to that little voice inside of you. Do you recognize having that voice way back and just ignoring it, or?
Well, there are two voices in your head. Okay, everyone has both of these voices. In my book, Get Your Shift Together, there's a voice that I talk about. I dedicate a whole chapter to it. Mm-hmm. It's called the big mouth inside your head. And that's the voice that tells you you're not good enough and you're not smart enough and you're not worthy enough. Every time you set out to achieve your goals and every time you set out to do something better with your life or to make a step forward, that voice says, oh, you know, you're not smart enough to do this. You better play it safe. Remember the last time you tried something, it didn't work. You're going to humiliate yourself. And that's what the big mouth does, and that voice comes from a lifetime of negative labels that were bestowed upon you when you were a child, and you took those labels into your adult life. The other voice, that's the voice from your heart's desire, and that's the voice that – sorry, I'm switching phones here because I felt the battery dying. So that's the
Sound
voice
good.
That – Notice I'm such a pro, aren't I?
You are a pro. You sound better than you did a minute ago, so you're good.
So anyway, that other voice, that heart's desire, that's the one that's calling you. It's that silent nudge that you get and you just know, you know, I should be doing something else. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to ignore. But the more you get in tune with it, the louder it becomes and it starts pushing you in the right direction of your life.
I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, we read Fox years ago and I studied that. And, you know, and Evan Fox talks about that. You know, he talks about your heart's desire. In his belief, we were born for one divine purpose. And until we really seek that out, we'll never be really, truly free or happy. Now, whether people believe that or not, you know, I just associate it with my own life.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, this, I agree with that. But I think we are. I think we have a few different purposes. I think our lives can go in a few different directions for the positive. And, you know, the choice you make will take you in a totally different direction, I'm sure. But sometimes it's just hard to find that purpose. To most people, it really is, you know, because most people say, you know, I got to get a job. I got to get any job. I got to pay the bills. And it's tough for people to make that choice.
Yeah, especially in this day and age. Well, maybe it was before. I shouldn't use that as an excuse, but you know, the way that, you know, just kind of society is, we just keep moving, we chase money, we just keep it going, white picket fence, all that stuff, never stopping to really, you know, look inward and see what's going on. I mean, it's easy. I know that from my own experience. I spent a lot of years just doing the next thing that popped into my head, you know what I mean? So before we move on to more about the book and, you know, what you're doing today, I'm curious to know, when you were doing the stand-up, you know, for me, being a layman, I guess, you know, it always just appears to me that lifestyle is kind of challenging in a lot of ways. Long nights, a lot of bars, dark lights, cigarette smoke, maybe a lot of distractions, drugs, alcohol, women, gamble. I don't know. How'd you weather through all that stuff?
I did all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. except for the cigarette smoke. However, at that time, there was smoking in the club room.
Yeah.
And man, I just kept thinking, oh my God, this is horrible. But yeah. I did party a little too much, and that's another reason why I went on that self-help quest too. Mm-hmm. I started getting to this groove that everything was the same. You go to this club, right? Mm-hmm. After that, you party. You go to this club, and after that, you party. And you don't go to bed. You go right and do your local TV and radio shows to promote the club, and that can kill you. And there are still a lot of people still doing that.
Sure.
Unless they make it to that next level, which is then you're doing theaters and stuff like that, where it's a lot easier on you.
Mm-hmm.
There's you have to control it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just always wonder for that. Some people, like, they just weather through all that without ever being distracted. Others, like myself, for instance, personally, I mean, before I went a different direction, I went all the way down. Doing your stand-up, how did you know it was time to change, and how long did that take?
Well, I think it's when I started realizing that, I'm doing the same thing here. And how come I'm not getting the big break? Because everyone in my circle was saying, gee, you're going to be next. You're going to be the next star. You're going to be the next this. And, how come? And then I turn on the TV and I say, well, this guy's got his own TV show. Hey, this guy, what's going on here? And then I just started having weird dreams, and I started talking to some people who were psychologists and stuff. And I just came to this realization that I have been avoiding the big breaks. And let me explain what I mean by that. It was important. I was what they called a road warrior. Now, in order to make it in this business, you really have to station yourself quite a few months out of the year in either a New York City club or an L.A. club, mm-hmm. like the Improv or the Comic Strip or Catch a Rising Star at the time. And that's where the industry people come and see you and discover you for TV, for commercials, for movies, for whatever. And I was afraid to do that. So I took another route. And because I was afraid that, they wouldn't like me, or I wouldn't be good enough, or I'd screw it up. So I went on the road, and I was considered one of the main attractions on the road. And I hit every club in the country. And at the time, there were hundreds and hundreds of clubs throughout the country in the 80s. Oh,
yeah.
My God. And in the early 90s, there were so many. Omaha, Nebraska had two clubs. Des Moines, Iowa. So I was constantly on the road. And I used the excuse, well, I don't have time for the L.A. clubs and for the New York clubs. I'm making good money and I'm doing this. And thinking that somehow, by a fluke, somebody would discover me there. And when I came to the realization that I was just afraid to get discovered, that's when I told you earlier, I went on that self-help quest. And to give myself the confidence to know that I am good enough. But as I said, ironically, when I realized I had it and the industry was very interested, I said goodbye and I did something else.
Did you seek out counsel before you did that? Or did you just kind of know?
No, not really. Not really. I didn't do that. The only counseling I had was I read all these books, and mm-hmm. I mean, I really read them, and I would write notes in the books, and I started writing in a journal and once you do something like that and you start hearing these same messages over and over, it actually becomes a part of who you are. Mm-hmm. It's almost like brainwashing in a way, but in a very positive way. It does away with all of the negative stuff, and it just replenishes you with who you really are and what you really can do.
Yeah.
And I would listen to these CDs in my car and on a plane, and before I go to sleep, when I wake up in the morning, and saying affirmations to myself, and mm-hmm. and this didn't happen overnight either, Todd. I'm talking this was years of stuff, and because it takes years to build negative habits, and it took my whole life to create the fact that I didn't think I was good enough. So it took years to bury those old habits and create new ones. And that's what my book is about, Get Your Shift Together. It's about shifting your focus and your way of thinking to turn these negatives into positives.
Well, and I ask you that you know, what really triggered the change. And that is what it, I mean, obviously we have to be somewhat unhappy or disturbed with the way things are, or we wouldn't look to change our thinking, you know? I mean, so for some of us, it's always it seems like a bad place to be when I have to look in a different direction. For you, you said you were just uncomfortable enough or knowing it wasn't your calling, and you sought out some personal development stuff, and that constant, a friend of mine calls it put new stuff on top of old stuff. And that makes sense to me. You know, the positive just keep listening to that, and who we surround ourselves with. When I ask you about counsel, I also meant like mentors. I mean, at the time, you didn't have any, probably, I would guess, personal development mentors. You had stand-up comedian type mentors. Did you just go to the library and positive affirmation? How'd that work for you?
I went to a lot of bookstores and just picked up the right books. But as far as comedy mentors, you know, George Carlin was a good friend.
Yeah.
And you know, we never sat down to break bread or eat dinner or anything, but it was really weird. We had a nice long distance phone conversation that went on like a few times a year. And he would even call me. You know, I never really had to pick up the phone. He found out one time that I was going to quit stand up, and a friend of his, I'm making a long story short, this was at the very early 80s, and I was just sick of the politics and not being able to perform at the city clubs until you put in a certain amount of time, and, you know, they always treated the new guy like crap, and I was going to quit. I was just going to quit. So a friend of mine told George Carlin, he knew Carlin quite well, and Carlin called me from before he was going on at the Sands Hotel in Atlantic City. And I didn't believe it was him, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he said, "Hey, Steve, George Carlin." I said, "Yeah, right." And I hung up the phone. So I hung up. He called me back. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you what he said, but he cursed. He said, "Let me tell you something, blank, blank, blank. You hang up up." And I go, "Oh, my God, this really is George Carlin." So we talked, and he gave me his Beverly Hills home phone number. He said, "When I come back from this tour, I want you to call me at this date at this time." And I did. And he kept in touch with me. He would call me like, you know, about four or five times a year. I mean, I'll never forget that.
Absolutely.
That was incredible.
That's a wild story. That's like a God shot, you know, like how, you know, just the hit. And you said it, you'll never forget that. So, I mean, it was important to you. You see that today, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
So, I mean, how long have you been really, how long has it been since you got your shift together, let's say?
I don't know if I do quite 100%. I don't know if anybody does, to be honest with you. But I would say, really together, I would say in the past 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, really together. I started changing drastically many years ago, you know, and that was 15 years ago, 16 years ago when I made that shift. And that was a scary thing to do, you know, dedicating 17 years or 16 years of your life as a stand-up comedian, and you're very successful at it, you're really good at it, and then say you're going to do something that you know absolutely nothing about.
Yeah.
I didn't have any connections or anything, but, you know, I followed my heart, and the connections just started falling into place.
Yeah, that's wild to say that. It's almost like once I really commit to listening to my heart and being maybe a better version of me, it just seems like the whole universe opens right up. And the next, and you talk about that in your book too, I think, the Corvette guy, and you know how just it seems like the universe comes to our aid, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. You're exactly right. It's a lot of things like the Corvette guy came into my life, and a lot of serendipitous things. And, you know, if one of my books is definitely has to be, or at least a couple of chapters in the next book on all of the strange events that took place in my life that led me to incredible opportunities.
Yeah, that, I mean, looking at my own life so far, the same kind of thing. And I don't always recognize it at the time. You know, it's, again, not dying, you know, and being able to look back and actually inventory things. I say, oh, man, that was wild. You know, and some of those people I've never seen again, you know. I don't know, call them angels, call them whatever you want. I don't get in a debate. I don't believe you do either. But, you know, they just show up for whatever reason. I get something gets handed to me almost, you know, if I'm paying attention.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird.
I love it, though. It's like goosebump stuff going on, you know?
Well, you know, exactly. But when you're in tune with you, with in that state of flow, and when you're in tune with your calling, stuff like that does happen. But the thing that keeps people from seeing it is any kind of negative emotion, whether it be fear, anger, jealousy, envy, guilt, all those things can keep these opportunities, these serendipitous things that come to you, they put blinders on so you can't see them. And, you know, sometimes I think, you know, when we pass on, it would be funny because I think we meet God or whoever it is that you believe in. And, you know, you have a gripe with them. And you, hey, say, so, you know, I really shouldn't be talking to you. I prayed for this and I asked for this and I asked for that. And you never gave me any opportunities at all. Nothing. And God goes, oh, really? Come here, Schmuck. I want to show you something, you know. And he shows you like half a dozen right off the bat where opportunity was going. Hey, idiot, I'm over here. What are you kidding me? But you couldn't see it because why? You were too jealous because somebody was making it before you. And here's another one where your anger interfered with you seeing the opportunity because you had a be right, and therefore opportunity passed you by again. And you know, you see all these opportunities going by, and say, "Oh my God, did I screw up my life?"
Yeah, and if that would ever happen, and then you're thinking, "Man, oh man, am I ever a knucklehead? I wish I wouldn't have just said that." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean that. You mentioned a lot of things, and you mentioned fear a whole pile of times already. You know what I mean? Working through that, I think that probably is the biggest. You know, whatever, I mean, it's just a word and we only have so many words, but that working through all that for me, I want you to talk about that in a minute. But for me, you mentioned about the fear of success and the fear of failure or the other way around. I've inventory my life. I see that I always was afraid you wouldn't like me or that you would. And that's always a crappy place to be too. You know, what am I doing? I mean, that's crazy. You know, so.
That's like Groucho Marx is saying, you know, I don't ever want to be a member of a club that would want me as a member.
I just relate to that stuff now. But at the moment, at the time I'm in that fear or anger or whatever it is, I don't always see that until the shift, until I seek out the shift, I guess, almost, until I'm disturbed or uncomfortable enough that I'm thinking this isn't working anymore. I'm going a different way, you know?
Yeah, I get that.
It's always a drag for some people because like for me, I hit a wall and it hurt and it was crushing. I went through an extremely low bottom before I looked a different direction. You know, I just wasn't willing to give up my plan. You know, and it was a horrible plan. It wasn't working for a long time, you know.
So that's because your plan was your comfort zone. Your plan probably didn't push you, you know, to go any further. It's your plan was like, okay, I'm going to stay in this box. And I'm safe in this box. That's what my plan was with stand up.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a small fish in a big fish in a small pond, then a small fish in the ocean, and that's what I was doing.
Yeah. It's wild though being able to look back and seeing that and think, man, what was I doing? But I guess we're doing the best our condition allows at the moment with our thinking. You know,
the thing is too is thank God you were able to get out of it and to realize that there are a lot of people, and that's why I wrote the book, and that's why I do what I do. My mission in life is to show people that how to be truly happy and successful regardless of their circumstances.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. One of the things that, and this always pissed me off, excuse the expression, but you know, it really was valuable to me when I stopped and looked at it is, and you've heard this before, I'm sure, but the question, what would you do if you were guaranteed that you could not fail? And I didn't have an answer for that. You know what I mean? Like I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what am I doing? There got to be more. I got to have some more purpose than this.
Yeah.
And then I'm afraid. You know, right away, though, like you talked about, those voices, you know, I'm not really good enough. I don't really deserve that. Nah, there's no way I can do that. That's too hard. All that crap comes right up.
Oh, yeah. And another thing, which is fear in disguise, is that you think of all the things that has to be done for you to get to where you want to go.
Yeah.
And you just go, oh, man, now I got to do this, then I got to do that. Oh, by the time I get there, I'll be this. Oh, forget it. And that's not the way to look at it. You say, this is what I want to do, and you take it one step at a time. Somebody said to me in one of my workshops that she wanted to be an actress, and she was 64 years old, 62 years old. And, you know, she looked wonderful. She was great. She didn't look anywhere near 62. And even if she did, it didn't matter. And I said, and she got real emotional and started crying. And she said, you know, I never even took an acting class. And I just would wonder what it would be like. And I said, well, why don't you just do it? Take an acting class. and, you know, and maybe just get picked and go do some plays. Who she goes, do you know how old I'll be by the time I finish the class and get a part? And I said, yes, the same age you'll be if you don't do it.
Absolutely. Yep.
And I've heard, you've heard that, you know.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
And, yeah, exactly.
All the reasons why I can't instead of one reason why I can. I used to have a boss that said that to me, and it used to always make me nuts, but it's so true.
Yep.
I think like a lot of us, I don't know, do you relate to this at all, that, you know, we always like to start at the finish line, you know?
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
not
and
real.
You know what? And that's the big problem. Mm-hmm. That's the big problem. That's a big part of my book, too, because get your shift together, because everybody is fixated on the goal, you know? Mm-hmm. And they even put their happiness on hold with the goal. They say to themselves, I'll be happy when I achieve the goal. I'll be happy when I make more money. I'll be happy when I get more respect. I'll be happy when the weekend gets here. I'll be happy when all this crap is out of the way. It's the journey towards the goal. The journey towards the goal is more important than achieving the goal, because the journey towards the goal is the unfoldment of your life. That's where you experience who you are and what you're made of. And that's the essence of it. And there are so many people that say, you know, I'll be happy when, and what if you don't achieve that goal for 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Unconsciously, you just created a mindset that signifies that you won't be happy until you achieve a certain status. But the danger there is that if it takes you 5 years to achieve it, that unhappiness stays with you.
Yeah.
So you only have temporary relief. You still don't even feel the complete happiness because you were miserable those 5 years waiting to achieve the goal.
Yeah. We could almost do a whole show on just living in the moment, you know, being present in your own life and, you know, grateful for where you're at right this moment. You know, there's a lot. It's hard to bring myself back or allow myself to be brought back to that all the time, you know. Now, you said about, you started listening to the personal development people, the people that were talking about helping other people and about living your dream. And how long did it take, or can you recognize, till that little voice started burning brighter, you know, until you could really start connecting with the voice,
well,
your heart?
I'll give you the main one, which is pretty cool. This story's in the book too. It was at a Tony Robbins seminar. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, at that point, I was just, that voice was getting a little louder. You know, you can do this. I know you can. You know, this is something that I know you can do, and this is what you should be doing. But then the big mouth voice kept going, oh, here you go again. You dedicated your whole life, 16 years as a stand-up comedian. You made so many sacrifices. Now you're going to quit again. You did the same thing before. You went to 8 years of college, and you became a teacher, and you quit, and you did stand-up. You just can't make up your mind. You know, you have a relationship now, and blah, blah. So at this Tony Robbins seminar, I was noticing how funny Tony is, and how the command he had of an audience. And it clicked, and something, I don't know what it was a weird power, made me pick up my pen, and I don't even remember doing this. It's after I wrote it down that I remembered I did it. And I wrote, you should be doing this, you could be doing this. And then I wrote in big letters, you are going to do this, whatever it takes. And I remember putting down my pen, and then I looked at what I wrote, and I wasn't even aware that I wrote it. And that was it. It was total. As a matter of fact, in the middle of the seminar, I didn't even write this in a book, and I should have, because it's so funny. I went, yeah, just like that. And it was quiet. It was quiet. And Tony, I swear to you, Tony yells out, someone just got an epiphany.
Yeah.
And I said, you have, and I yelled out, you have, I can't curse on your show, but I said, you have no blanking idea how much. And everyone just started clapping and applauding. And it was really almost embarrassing, but the embarrassment, you know, was buried by laughter.
Isn't that cool, though? That's a great story. And I mean, because the like-minded people that were around you, they knew what that sound was, right?
Oh, absolutely.
That's
cool. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you find now that, because I laugh all the time, you know what I mean? I mean, I love to laugh, and sometimes I still laugh inappropriately, and that I'm working on, you know, I'm doing the best I can with that. But, you know, the humor, like you talked about, now that you're meeting in corporate places, you're motivating people all over, speaking at seminars. I mean, the humor really does, because this is serious business, but it really keeps a nice lightened up aspect to the whole learning, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And, And that's the key to my success is my sense of humor. I use humor as a guise to convey a very important message. Mm-hmm. My first 5 minutes, 10 minutes, no matter what corporate group I speak for, I do nothing but make them laugh their butts off.
Yeah.
The psychology behind that is that they're all relaxed. They get to like me. You could see it. The energy level is up. Their shoulders are straight. And, I that's when I hit them with the message, and I have their attention for the full time that I'm up there. Today we live in the United States of entertainment.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
And unless a speaker has some kind of entertaining value, he runs the risk of losing the entire audience. And I never do that ever because it's an emotional roller coaster. The laughter continues throughout the program.
Yeah, that it's so cool. Do you see looking back, or do you relate to that? For yourself, that I mean, all those years of stand-up were perfect for you to do what you're created to do.
Yep.
I mean, isn't that wild? I think it's fascinating. So, what?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, that. How did the book come about? I mean, did you know? Was your heart tugging at you? Did you know you need to write it down, or were you writing notes for years and put it together? Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was writing notes for years, and then there was a point after a couple of years where it just went boom, and I just started writing about and the thing that was tough about writing the book is that I got very personal. You know, people look up to me now as someone who has their stuff together, their shift together, I should say. And there's a lot of very personal stories, and I talk about my vulnerabilities, and I talk about my fear of success and my fear of failure and what I went through. And I realized that was the most important part of the book, is to be that vulnerable. And even the reviews I got on Amazon for the book were incredible, and everyone loved the fact that I got so personal. Mm-hmm. And they said, "Maya, he made me feel that I'm okay, I'm normal." Even people who are successful still, and I tell them in the book, and I'll tell your audience right now, I still go through that. I still have bouts of fear. Mm-hmm. I still have bouts of pushing myself to the next level. It's not anywhere as near as what it used to be, but it's there. And now that I know I have the tools to turn these things around, and one of them, by the way, Todd, is my sense of humor.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the tools I use to ward off fear. I mean, Mark Twain said, nothing can stand against the assault of laughter, not even fear. And if you can find your way to laugh off the fears in your life, man, that's incredibly empowering. And I say that humor is the instant mind shift, you know, and it nips negative thought patterns in the bud before they blossom into emotional havoc. And this is all the stuff I started incorporating in my speeches. And I used that in the book. And by writing the book, I instilled even more tools. So now I got it down to a science. And my new program is the title of the book.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you started shifting. Mm-hmm. And you were taking those notes, and the book came about. Did you, at this point, seek out, at this point, by the people you connected with, like-minded people, positive people, did you start seeking out any mentorship then, or have you been kind of a lone wolf?
A lone wolf.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Because we're strong on mentorship here, you know. I wanted to ask you that question, you know what I mean? Like,
There are people that I admired, and one of the keys to my success is that I was never afraid to ask the best people in the business. And I'll tell you, listeners, that now, if you're starting a new business or if you're having a problem in what you're doing now, the key to any success is don't be afraid to ask somebody for help.
Yeah.
And you ask for who is the best at this problem that I have that can help me solve it, and you find that person and ask them. You very rarely get a no, because people are always willing to help someone, especially when you acknowledge them as being the expert in that field.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Refreshing you said that. I'm relating to the show here, you know, and the question I get asked all the time, and people say, you know what book you should write, if you know you have valuable information, if people keep asking the same question. And everybody asks me the same question, how do you get those remarkable people on the show? And I want to like kind of sell the idea, but I'm going to blow it here and put it out there. You know how I get the greatest people like yourself? I ask. That's it. That's the secret. You know, I just kind of ask. You know what I mean? It's wild how people just are willing to share their stories and their positive experiences and help me. You know?
ask and you shall shall receive.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, at least if I don't ask, I'll never know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and if you do ask and they say no, what's the big deal?
It's not that big of a deal. I'm a little relentless, though. I might ask again, but, you know.
Good deal. I'll go to begging for crying out loud.
So the book, was it compiled of a lot of notes and you just knew in your heart, or what he said to you one day? Did you ever remember this, like having lunch or something, someone saying to you, hey, you should write a book?
Yeah. A lot of people said that. A lot of people. But, yeah. You know, it when I started delving into it and really getting into it, it just flowed. It just came out. It was amazing. As a matter of fact, man, the weirdest feeling is when you're in that state of flow, and I would let it go for a couple of days, and then I'd go back and read the 25 pages that I wrote, and I went, oh, my God, I can't believe I wrote this.
Yeah.
You know? And then when you say to yourself, man, this is really good. I mean, and really personal. I can't believe I wrote this.
Yeah.
And it was really weird, too, because – when the book was near completion, it was very serious, mm-hmm. You know, and everyone loved it. But, you know, my when I brought it to an editor, the editor said, well, where's the humor? You know, there's no humor in here. And it was kind of weird because there was a little bits of humor here and there, but I really had to go back and then take a totally different perspective of it and find places where you're the first person I ever told this to, and find places where the humor can be interjected, mm-hmm. You know, and it's almost like I had to rewrite the book, and I did. And now the book is absolutely hysterical, but the message is so poignant. It's and as people say, how could you be so serious and so drop dead funny from one sentence to the next? And you know, I said, well, I'm incredibly gifted. What
I'm a genius.
What can I say?
What's wrong with you?
I'm psychotic.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're saying that, again, I'm relating to my own insides and my journey so far. It seems to me like when the shift starts to happen and begins to, when I cultivate it and participate in it, it seems like I can be intimate. I can be very personal because it's just the truth, and I'm just not that it's not that big of a deal. I don't know how to put words to that, you know?
Yep.
All these secrets and all this crap, you know, whatever. And I still personalize things and, you know, I can get my feelings hurt. But you know what? I've learned through the years that I have like one life today. I don't have to, you know, depending on where I am or who's around me, I don't have to think about different stuff and protecting or seek, you know what I mean? I'm open.
No, I get it.
I'm free. That's what's cool. And I had no idea that was going to happen to me, you know?
It's the greatest feeling in the world.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way to describe it. What's the best feeling? It's total freedom.
Yeah.
A freedom just to do what you were put on this planet to do. And it has nothing to do with money. It has nothing to do with anything. Money's important, but man, when you can get to that point where you just love what you do, there's a difference between waking up in the morning and saying, oh man, I gotta go to work.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to work. See you later.
Yeah. I love it.
Big difference.
I'm getting old, but I go to bed sometimes at like 9 or 9:30 and like, because I just can't, I love getting up in the morning. I love
it. I go to bed at 8:00. I wake up at 4:30 every morning.
Yeah. Every morning, huh?
I swear my wife, when I'm home, and even when I'm on the road, I get up early. My wife, this is my regime. My regime, it's almost like a religion.
Yeah.
We get up, and we have three labs. We take them for a walk. I don't care if it's winter, summer, spring, fall. We take them for a two-mile walk. And then we take them home. Then we go to the gym for an hour and a half. Then we go home, and we have breakfast. We get our jobs done, and, you know, that's what we do. But we go to bed about 8 o'clock.
Yeah, that's cool. I think that's great. You know what I mean? I love that. I love it.
Not tonight. Tonight, we're going out to dinner.
Yeah. Oh, and happy Valentine's Day, by the way, too. What's your wife's name?
Excuse me?
Steve, what's your wife's name?
Let me think. Wait a second. Gina.
You're killing me. Well, thank her, too, for me and all of this, if you would, for giving you up for a little bit here, sharing your experience and your story. So
pleasure. That's my pleasure. Gina.
And while I'm on it, your birthday is tomorrow, too, isn't it?
Yeah, man. My birthday is tomorrow, and it's celebrating that day big time also.
All right, good. Well, happy birthday, man. I'm glad. I'm going to take ownership of it and say thanks for celebrating your birthday with us here at Growing Up on WEB Radio.
I appreciate it. I do appreciate it. And believe me, it's my pleasure because you're a part of the team. You're a part of the person that gets the message out there, you know. And my promise to anyone who purchases this book, it's not a cure-all, but I promise you, no matter what level your degree of happiness is at, if you read this book, you can be happier than you ever thought you could.
Yeah.
And by being happier, you have a better chance of being successful.
Talk about that's beautiful, by the way. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Talk about how people can contact you and how they can get the book.
They can get the book on my website. The easiest way to get it is just go to my website, which is Steve Rizzo, RIZZO.com. And the book is on every single page of my website. You might want to cruise my website. There's a lot of valuable free stuff for you to take in. So a lot of good videos you could watch. And the book is getting great, great, great reviews. And it was on Amazon bestseller the second day it came out about a month
nice.
Ago.
That's real nice. Congratulations.
Thanks.
How long has it been out and available? Not long, right?
Only about a month now. It's only
all
been
right.
available about a month. And I expect great things. And my promise to you is that it will get on the New York Times bestsellers list eventually. I know it will.
Hey, speaking of that, you just made another promise to me. I just want to ask you quick. I mean, I do a lot of visual, you know, I like vision boards, treasure maps, those kind of things. Do you?
Oh, cool.
You said you write stuff down, and it's nothing new, but I mean, do you utilize a lot of that stuff to envision, because you just said it out loud.
I visualize all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
All the time. We know when I do my speeches, I always ask to the room that I'm going to speak in, whether it's I'm speaking for 50 people or 10,000, you know, because I speak for, you know, big groups and small groups.
Mm-hmm.
I always go to the room and I step on the stage, the platform, and I visualize everyone laughing their butts off, everyone taking notes. I visualize people coming up to me afterwards saying, thank you, you made a difference. I always do that. I visualize how I want my day to go, waking up early in the morning, visualize myself having a great time with my wife, playing with my dogs, or I even today, I'll give you an example. I had a very difficult meeting, and I knew it was going to be difficult, with my ex-manager, because I knew what he was going to be asking for. And I visualized myself having a calm conversation with him, and it worked for the most part. Until he got up and walked out. But, he did. But there was no arguing or anything like that. But I suggest everyone do that. You know, visualize how you want the outcome to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, visualize you having a good time, whatever it is that you're doing. And it kind of helps. And even if you see it's not winding up the way you visualize it, you could just say, hey, you know what? I have control over this situation when you see it swaying the other way. And it gives you a little bit more incentive to try to make it work.
I'm glad I asked that. And thanks for sharing that, too. And that's what I think, even in your presentations with the humor and what we do here on the show, and a lot of other people do it, too. But it's like for here on the show, what you're doing is sharing your own experience. So
yep.
There's not really a big debate then at that point. I guess somebody could still debate it, but it's almost like listeners then can kind of relate to what they need to relate to, and what they don't. But it's not an argument or a debate, and you're not telling anybody what to do, you know, because a lot of us have that defiance in there, don't tell me what to do kind of thing. With humor, I think it's the same kind of thing. If you get them light and then you hit them with something, you know, they can – you're not telling them what to do, so they can kind of
exactly. And you hit the nail on the head, Todd, because that's just it. They don't look at me as somebody up there preaching. When you're funny,
right.
When you're funny, it's non-threatening. It's
mm-hmm.
it's your communication skills sharpen tenfold.
Yeah.
You because everybody likes somebody who can make them laugh.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
And that's why it works. That's why it works.
At that point, I'm able to receive the message too, possibly. You know what I mean, or some of it. You know, without that guard, without always defending everything and blocking everything out, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the other weird thing. You know, I started off as a teacher, then a comedian. Now I'm a speaker. And I realize as I look back in my life that everything's coming in full circle. All those skills are making me the speaker that I am today.
Yeah, I hear that from a lot of guests, man. That's really cool. You know, it really is. It makes it all, it just makes it all like cool, fun, you know.
Absolutely.
What do you got up your sleeve? Do you want to divulge any, what do you got coming up? What's going on?
I got quite a few bookings coming up. I'll be home for about a week and a half, 2 weeks. I just came back from Philadelphia. I was in L.A. I was in Phoenix. It was like a four-city tour. I'm working on some really good projects. I'm dedicating a lot of time to doing wonderful shows like yours. And I love doing this, getting the message out, creating, as I said, new projects. But these 2 weeks, besides doing the radio shows, I'm going to spend a lot of time with my wife and my dogs and relax at home and, you know, drink a couple of bottles of wine and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
That sounds good. I think I saw last week something where you put something somewhere saying, I'm going to rest. And then you were not resting, I don't think, much.
That's right. Because I know. I think you answered back that I thought you were resting.
Yeah, what's up with that? Well, I relate to that. You know what I mean? Yeah, I'm just going to take it easy and we keep moving.
Yeah, I know. But yeah. Sometimes those things are, things like that are very resting. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're very calming for the mind.
Yeah.
What we're doing here is quite calming for me. It's just a great feeling. I know people are listening, and you know, hopefully, some people get one or two things from this conversation that can make that can be the spark that ignites change in their lives. Who knows? Yeah. You know,
that's why
you should really appreciate what it is that you do. You know, because you're always interviewing these people, and you yourself have great insights on life. And you know, what a gift that is. You know, to send that. Those messages out to people who need it. There are so many people that need just little pushes. That's all they need. You know?
Well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. I get so much out of it that sometimes I don't look at it that way. I mean, I guess I'm still a little self-absorbed, but I mean, all this came about without me seeing any of it coming. And I'm glad of that too. You know, I mean, when I research you guys and I seek people out and I'm constantly reading all this positive stuff, I can't help it. Allow myself to be tricked into thinking about positive stuff. You know what I mean?
That's pretty cool. See, now you get what I'm, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
When I went on the self-help quest, you know, all that, you just keep reading and all of a sudden you start thinking that way.
Yeah. And I mean, I start feeling it and believing it and knowing it and I get joy from it and purpose. You know, one thing about Blog Talk Radio here is that all the shows are archived. So we kind of took everybody's excuses away. You know, you can always listen to the show and it doesn't matter what, you know, when people are on their computer, they can listen to the show from a new tab and all the time. Yeah. So, and we get a lot of listens in the archives and that's cool. They're there. Yours is there. I got a piece of you here and it's there forever. So it's really valuable. So what would you tell somebody? This is always a stopper maybe, but what would you, if anybody's listening and they just feel a little disturbed or maybe that they're maybe not doing exactly what they were created to do, what would you kind of share from your own experience that you did first? What would you do?
Okay, here's what you need to do to get what it is that you want in life and to make sure that you can it all starts with enjoying the day. Hmm. If you're not enjoying yourself, it's very difficult to become successful because enjoyment is the spark that ignites passion and enthusiasm. So every morning, as soon as you wake up, when you open up your eyes, know that you are entering into consciousness, and it is at that moment that your creativity is at its most powerful. As soon as you open up your eyes, you can steer your thoughts and your emotions in the direction that you want them to go. In other words, you can choose to seize the day and let the day, instead of letting the day seize you. I think we can all agree that too many people today, more than ever, as soon as they open up their eyes, before they even get out of bed, the first thing they think of is the grueling day they had the day before, all the stuff they couldn't get done or didn't get done, the idiots they had to deal with, the arguments they've had with people. Then they're thinking of all the stuff that has to be done that day, and then they can't understand why when they're going to work their energy level is rock bottom, and they can't understand why they're achieving their goals. You can't achieve your goal when your energy level is rock bottom, whatever goal you're trying to achieve. So what I want people to do, I want you people that are listening, as soon as you open up your eyes, know that your only goal at that moment is to make yourself feel good and to give yourself confidence to get through the day. So you do that by immediately focusing on something or someone that you're totally grateful for, and it doesn't matter who it is. Maybe it's the person lying next to you, or the person you wish was lying next to you, or your children, or the dog lying on the side of your bed, a particular goal you achieved, the bird singing out your window. It doesn't matter what it is. The point is that you keep building from there. You find something you're grateful for, and you hold on to it. Now, why am I asking you to do that? Because gratitude is the most powerful connection that you have to your higher self, and you always want to start your day connected to that part of yourself. And the reasons are obvious. And when you get this little bit of a, and this takes seconds to do, it takes a lot longer for me to say it than it is to do it. And as soon as you get that little bit of a buzz going, you get your feet on the floor in your room and you say, hey, man, I'm going to enjoy this day. And you visualize how you want your day to go. This isn't Pollyanna mumbo jumbo. This is an invaluable science. Scientists are all in agreement today that our lives and move in the direction of what we focus on and what we think about day in and day out. Not only do our lives move in the direction of what we focus on and think about, but those very things we're thinking about and focusing on are moving closer to us. In other words, the more you focus on your lack, the more of that you're going to get back. But the more you focus on wanting to be successful, the more opportunities will come your way.
Sure. Nice. I appreciate it. That was deep, Steve. There was a lot in there. So, I mean, I'm with you. I think like you, no offense or whatever you want to say, but I really do. I mean, I've learned that through my own experience. I think participating in my own life and being grateful for the moment, the day, I found purpose kind of on purpose, you know? I mean, I sought it out. We don't get just struck happy, I don't think, you know? So there's some work to be done, some participating in my own life and helping other people and thinking of, you know, how to be useful for people. So that's what I found out. Steve, the book is called Get Your Shift Together. That's Mr. Steve Rizzo, steverizzo.com. Steve, I mean, I'm really grateful. I do really appreciate you taking time and sharing with us and being on the show. I really do.
I appreciate you having me, and I really appreciate what it is that you do. And you enjoy your Valentine's Day, and as I will. I really appreciate your time. Thanks, Todd.
Thank you so much, Steve. Have a great night. Thanks.
You too, buddy. Take care of yourself.
All right. Bye-bye.